Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome.
Our guest today is Hal Goldstein, and he is the author, editor, compiler of Meditating Entrepreneurs, Creating Success from the Stillness Within. Now, Hal spent his first 35 years traveling and earning master's degrees in mind, computer science, heart, social work, and spirit as a TM teacher. In 1984, Hal and his wife Rita honeymooned by driving from Palo Alto, California to Fairfield, Iowa, which is where I am right now, to meditate in large groups for personal development and world peace. To earn a living in Fairfield, Hal and Rita started Thaddeus Computing, which supported mobile computing users with magazines, apps, and refurbished devices. He semi-retired in 2011. Today, the company publishes the internationally distributed iPhone Life magazine and hosts the popular iPhoneLife.com website and podcast. Hal teaches entrepreneurship at Maharishi University of Management, where guest Fairfield entrepreneurs share their stories and wisdom. Hal-based Meditating Entrepreneurs and the MeditatingEntrepreneur.com website on their talks. And that is how I met Hal. Welcome to Writers' Voices, Hal.
Well, thank you, Monica. Thank you for having me.
So this putting together this book was a journey of many years, wasn't it?
Yes, it was an on and off event. Sometimes I'd work on it for days and weeks at a time, and then I'd put it aside for a month or two. So it took about 4 or 5 years to put it together, and it was quite a bit of work.
I bet. And when you pick up the book and you start reading it, each chapter is written as if the person that's about is writing it. But that's not exactly how it happened.
As you would know.
As I would know. Why don't you tell us how it did happen?
Yeah, just to step back, a number of people like myself moved to Fairfield to be part of this World Peace Project and for personal development with a transcendental meditation program. And to survive in Fairfield, many of us ended up starting businesses, even though we knew very little about business. And the stories, as you read in the book, your story and other people's stories are remarkable in terms of how businesses were created from nothing in pre-internet Iowa. And so I decided when I retired that with the university and students studying business, what a great opportunity it would be for the students to listen to people who did it, who actually started businesses themselves with little background. And so I decided to teach a class at Maharishi International University where I would invite entrepreneurs to come in each day and tell their story. And so from that, I videotaped everybody who came in, including you and your wonderful businesses. And then I transcribed them. So the students and the faculty who listened to it were so excited about it, and they thought it should be a book. And so I decided to put it into a book. And I started 3 or 4 times, I started writing it. And it ended up that I really thought it needed to be done in first person, because each person, each entrepreneur was so different, and each had their own way of expressing themselves and their own unique voice, that I decided it should be in first person. But I couldn't ask everybody to write their own story. And so I translated their talks to my class into a first-person narrative in which I tried to assume the voice of the person who was talking, to lesser and greater degrees of success. And it was really fun. It was like being, like when I wrote Monica's story, when I wrote your story, it was being in your world and going through your incredible tribulations of starting the company that took you for so many years and through so many difficulties. And so it was the same. I would get to be in This guy, Fred Gratson, who created what was later deemed the best ice cream in America by People magazine. And I got to be Troy Van Beek, who was a Navy SEAL, who ended up starting a solar energy company, and so on. And so that's how I ended up writing it. And then I also developed a structure that just sort of emerged, where I would tell the journey of each entrepreneur, the sort of wisdom, and then a spirit, what was behind their efforts. And so somehow that got together. So I tried to combine both the differences of the different speakers, but a common voice, a common theme, a common structure, so that it would read well. So that was sort of my thinking behind it, that evolved as I ended up writing it.
Now, translating the talks into a cohesive story is a lot harder than it sounds, I think, because
it was very challenging.
Yeah, because when you're speaking, you know, everybody goes kind of, you go off topic, you take little tangents, you take little side roads, and on the written page, you have to stay a little bit more focused on the direction of the story. So I'm just curious how you, like, did you transcribe the entire talk and then, like, cut it up and rearrange it, or how did you actually do that?
Well, so also, in addition to what you said, there's a lot of question and answer with the students. So the process of the talk was not linear, and yet I had to translate it into a linear thread.
That's the word I was looking for, linear.
Yeah. And so what did evolve was these three things that people tend to talk about: their story, you know, how they were able to create their business from nothing, bits of wisdom, you know, about life and about being an entrepreneur, stuff that they discovered. And then what was the heart? What was the, like, for example, the heart that I sort of captured from you is that where many entrepreneurs said, find what you love, you said, you was brilliantly, you said, love what you do. Mm. Well, love whatever it is you do. And that was sort of the theme, sort of an underlying theme that I that you had gotten from your father, and that was what I picked for you. And then for me, for example, I like helping people, and so whether it was my readers for my magazines or my employees or teaching at the university, so my theme was sort of helping people and uplifting others. And so so to answer your question, it was just working and reworking. I like editing and re-editing and re-editing. And I probably edited each person's chapter, I'm not exaggerating, 200-300 times as I would take pieces and eliminate. And it was hard. In fact, if I had to do it over again, I would make it about as half as long as I think it's very strong. I think it's strong as it is, but it's just the challenge is to keep cutting and to really get the essence of because people don't have the attention span that, you know, they used to.
Wow. That's, it's a very good point. Shorter is probably more impactful in some ways, although I know that there are readers who probably really love getting into getting the full story and the details behind it.
I'll tell you what I love too. With all the wisdom, I mean, people who came here and they were exposed to the knowledge of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and practiced transcendental meditation, and then they applied that to their businesses, and each person sort of expressed that knowledge in their own life experience in their own unique way. And there's so many just jewels of life wisdom. I mean, it's not just for the book. I don't think it's just for entrepreneurs. It's a wisdom book, in my opinion. It's just a practical life book where people discover that you can live, as Maharishi used to say, 200% of life, where it's possible to live a full spiritual life, a full life of joy and integrity, and at the same time, be successful in the world. And they're not contradictory, but they work together. And that was sort of the underlying theme of what I was trying to convey in the book.
So here is the professional recording of Hal Goldstein's introduction to meditating entrepreneurs creating success from the stillness within.
I wrote this book to share discoveries from those who created successful businesses starting from nothing in pre-internet rural Iowa. Our journeys demonstrate that inner peace and outer abundance, self-awareness and material success can go hand in hand. I want you to see from reading our stories that anything is possible. I want you to know that self-awareness, self-development, and living your passion are synergistic, not antithetical, to creating material success. Simply by reading story after story, I want your mindset to shift from I can't and I don't know how to I can't and I'll find a way. It is the book I wish I could have read when I began my company. Whether you are an entrepreneur or plan to be one, are interested in what it takes to be successful, or want a good read about an extraordinary community, this book will teach and inspire you.
So, Caroline, what do you remember from those first days of MIU in Fairfield?
This is interesting to me, this whole thing, because when people first came to MIU and they bought Parsons campus and so forth, I interviewed the first two people that came, and one was Jim Belalove, and the other one I can't remember his name. But people were skeptical in Fairfield about these people that were coming, because that meditation thing's a whole different lifestyle and everything, and so they were kind of skeptical. And I said, "Oh, don't worry, they'll keep to themselves. They'll be fine." And look what happened.
So, Caroline, can I ask you a couple questions?
Yes, sure.
Because I've been curious all along about how you. So now, when you were living in Fairfield at the time?
Yes.
We had just moved here about a year before.
I see. And who learned TM first, and how did that work among you, the family?
It was Dad.
It was your dad and I both.
Yeah,
did.
Yeah. Actually, we all learned at the same time. He made us all learn. My dad got interested in it because of he was, you know, part of the reason we had come to Fairfield initially was he wanted eventually to live off the land. He was really into sustainable agriculture, and he had bought a piece of property in Davis County and then looked for a job, and we were coming from Pennsylvania. He looked for a job within, you know, a half hour drive from the property that he had bought. There was no house on that property. It was just farmland, basically. And he found a job at French Reniker Engineers here in Fairfield. So that's how we ended up in Fairfield.
What year was that?
It was the end of 72.
Yeah.
Oh, so that was just right when the Maharishi International University purchased Parsons College. Is that right?
Yeah, I think Parsons maybe was actually closing
that
year.
Yeah, it was winding down.
That's right.
It was winding down. Uh-huh.
Right. It was just a bankrupt place.
Yeah. I remember going to one basketball game at the field house, I think, that first year.
It lost its accreditation. That was what happened. And so they, you know, that's why they...
Yeah. And...
You had the towel.
And, of course, the Maharishi University, International University, moving here was, you know, something right up Dad's alley, because they wanted an all-organic kitchen, and he wanted to grow all-organic food. So he sold produce to the kitchen.
Well, so I can understand how you two, I get a sense more of you, of the two of you, how far ahead of your time, you know, your father and the three of you were, and four of you, I guess you have a brother? Is that right?
I have a sister and three brothers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, terrific.
So we all learned.
Five beautiful children.
We did all learn TM. I think I'm the only one who still practices. And maybe I'll get it perfect someday. So anyway, Mom, when you are looking at this book, and I know some of your friends were interested in looking at it too, what do you find in the book that's interesting to you, other than my story?
Places that I know, the places that I like, excuse me, like Betsy Howland's Revelations. I mean, that, you know, because I love books and I just have always loved to go in there because I can spend hours in there just looking at those books. And I have quite a library at home, as you know. And so.
True.
But, you know, it's such a neat place the food is good and the atmosphere is great. And also, then the other one that I was interested in was Ron Bovard, because the artistic things that he does with stained glass is just magnificent. And I have seen those, you know, around. And I think the Sondheim has something that, don't they have some things in there?
Yes,
they do. And, you know, and the Sondheim, I mean, that was just fantastic that they were able to. And I think one of the things that was interesting to me was that when the flood happened and the big place in Iowa City that had all the things that happened,
Hampshire,
then they had nowhere to go. And so Sondheim inherited some of those people, some of those things. And so there we go, you know.
And the Sondheim is our community theater convention center. It's a, 500-some seat theater, I believe. And, yeah, we get some great acts there, things that I used to drive to Iowa City, which is over an hour away, which I love going to Iowa City. But, you know, during the winter and it's nighttime and the show gets out, the event's done at 10 o'clock, and, you know, it's much easier to just go here to see the touring musicals and concerts and acrobatic, Chinese acrobat, ballets.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's great. So think about this COVID thing. I'm really missing all the things that we used to do.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, one of the great stories in there was about our mayor, Ed Malloy.
Yes, that's another one I enjoyed too, yes.
And how he sort of, yes, I would imagine you would as a, you know, earlier Fairfieldite, because one of the things you were talking about, Caroline, was the fact when you had all these people coming in and with really different, you could say, if you're going to generalize, different values and different ways of looking at the world, all the people from all the world, throughout the world, that came to this small town in Fairfield. And then you had folks that lived here that had been farming for generations or manufacturing. And there was sort of a natural cultural clash. And usually with a university, there's always a town and gown kind of separation, and this was probably more exaggerated. And what Ed Malloy did, and I chronicle in the story, he is an entrepreneur himself, and he decided to run for mayor of Fairfield and bring everybody together. And his brilliant way of thinking was, instead of let's just solve our problems, let's sit together and have a sensitivity group and see where people are disagreeing with each other. And he didn't take that approach. He said, well, we all live in this community. What do we all want? And he had the city hire Northern Iowa consultants. And for 14 months, Ed and a team of meditators and non-meditators created a 10-year plan for Fairfield to transform Fairfield into the community that we all wanted, and had everybody buy in to the plan, because everybody, there was a piece for everybody, whether it was the Elks or the church groups or the meditating groups or whatever, or whether it were issues like enough food for everybody or sustainability or things that, so anyway, so they had a whole list of, I forgot, 90 some objectives. And for 10 years, they worked together to create this plan. And by the halfway through, it's sort of like what it is now, where people just like each other and get along very well with each other and respect each other. And I think to an exceptional degree compared to most university towns.
Well, I think another thing that really helped was the entrepreneurs, the businesses that started here in town, mm-hmm. many of whom hired non-meditators.
Exactly.
And, you know, both of my Fairfield-based businesses with employees are majority non-meditator employees. And
yeah, mine had about 40% non-meditators, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, people realize that their livelihoods are, you know, their ability to have these jobs, which are often good jobs, that you don't find a lot of that type of job in small rural towns generally. And so they, I think, appreciate the fact that they're here, that those businesses are here because of the university being here.
Yeah. You know, and I just want to add a couple things that Caroline mentioned, Betsy Holland, for example. So her story was very interesting. She came to Fairfield in the mid-90s and found that there really wasn't a place for people to gather, for meditators to gather in town. Just a community place. It didn't have to be meditators, but the idea of a place that was comfortable to sit and talk. And so this whole idea, this whole bookstore, used bookstore, a place with a lot of light, a lot of room where people could just sit all day, developed. And she has a very unique kind of way of running things. She at one point was had like, I think it was 17 children, adopted children and so on, when she was temporary and permanent children. And so she ended up running her business like she ran her family. In fact, she said, be like, lead like mom, be firm, consistent, and loving. And so it's a beautiful story. And then Ron Bovard, who was an artist, and he had a vision of the Renaissance, when the artists used to work together in a community rather than as individuals. And so he created this business where he was bringing heaven to earth with these beautiful pieces of stained glass. And he had teams of artists working together on the projects. And so the story after story are these really very different people and very different kinds of businesses in a time where you wouldn't think it was even possible to create those kind of businesses, because we're in the rural Iowa, disconnected. Again, this was before the internet, many of us. And so
it was
a very fun project. It's very inspiring for me to sit in that class and listen to yet another entrepreneur who comes. And it's so funny, they all say the same thing, which is sort of what you said too, Monica, which is, oh, I'm really not an entrepreneur or business person. It was sort of an accident.
I know. I think that is what I said. I was an accidental entrepreneur. I never set out to do that.
Right, right. And everybody says the same thing, and everybody thinks, oh, I don't know what I could teach to a business class. I don't know anything about business. I just ended up running this great business, you know.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Hal Goldstein, author of Meditating Entrepreneurs, Creating Success from the Stillness Within. So, Hal, how many different entrepreneurs came to speak to your class over the years?
Oh, well, this is the thing. There's only 15 in the book, and I have about 80 on videotape.
Whoa.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And these 15, and no offense to you or me, are not necessarily the best stories. They're just, it just so happened I picked those because they were either more complete or I happened to be in the mood that day or something, and I picked these.
I was going to ask, how did you choose who made it into the book?
Honestly, I mean, you know, Monica, some of the people in town and so on. There are so many wonderful stories. And if I could get sort of rewound again, I'd love to write more chapters to the books, especially knowing more about writing now than I knew before. I haven't decided yet, but if I start doing more podcasts like this and get people to read this book, because I don't want to read a book that nobody reads. I write a book that nobody reads, but I'm so inspired by the stories in the book, and I think so many people have told me how much it helped them in terms of thinking that they could do it. Because one of the things that when I bring entrepreneurs to my class, I try to get the students to think, we were just like you. We didn't know what we were doing. We were mixed up trying to find our way. We didn't have all the answers. And it looks like when these people come into the class that we know all this stuff, but we learned it along the way. And one of the things I do in the book, like in your story, for example, is I describe the challenges and the difficulties and the fact that it doesn't always go well. In fact, most of the time it doesn't. And it takes a kind of what it takes is persistence. It takes grit. And that's the one thing in common with all of us, I think, is that we all just, there are a number of things in common, but I think the thing in common with all entrepreneurs is, and all people that are successful in life, is grit. It's being persistent. It's having a passion towards a particular goal, but it's that persistency is the key.
I couldn't agree more, because sometimes people just give up way too soon, but other times, but I think I say this in my chapter too, about I've also seen entrepreneurs who stuck with it way too long. And
yes.
Yeah, and you have to know when your plan isn't working. That doesn't mean you quit. It means you look at what the market's telling you.
Yes.
And
that's how you became successful.
Absolutely. And I expect that your business, you had a few pivots along the way.
You want to hear one of the funniest pivots?
Yes.
And one of the extraordinary pivots was I'd been doing this business since 1985, writing magazines and newsletters to support people how to use their mobile devices, like laptops and palm tops and so on. And so in 2008, there was a confluence of events, and my business had been doing pretty good and pretty stable all these years, and we were supporting writing about Microsoft-based smartphones and pocket PCs. And in 2008, two things happened. One is the economy crashed, and secondly, everybody started buying iPhones. And consequently, nobody bought our magazine, because nobody, you know, with the market low and nobody and people interested in the iPhone, all of a sudden a steady cash flow of newsstand revenue and subscriptions, people just literally stopped buying. And so I ended up, and I always had a kind of policy where I wouldn't want to lay off anybody unless it was absolutely, you know, necessary. I had to lay off my entire business. I mean, I basically thought I was going to have to shut down. And so what I ended up doing, I had two of my people, Richard Hall, who you may know, he had been working for me for over 20 years as my editor. And then a woman named Marge Enright, who was such a good customer service person that people used to call her because they liked talking to her.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I decided, I had this idea that with the iPhone, you know, going, I asked Richard and Marge, I said, listen, I have this idea. You're going to have to go into unemployment insurance because I can't pay you. But if you're willing to work for nothing, and we can turn this thing around, then there'll be a bonus for you. And so I had a lot of loyalty. People and people trusted me, and thank God, and they were great people. And so what we decided to do was, instead of writing our next issue of Pocket PC Magazine, we decided to write iPhone Life Magazine. And so even though we knew nothing about the iPhone, in 3 months, we produced the next issue of our magazine. And because we had a subscription base, and because we had this very broad newsstand distribution that went to newsstands all over the world, we just said it was smart. iPhone Life Magazine, used the same code, send it to our subscribers and the newsstands all around the world. And of course, the subscribers had the option to to cancel their subscription and get a refund. And so what ended up happening was, our newsstand sales, we would get maybe 20% if the way it works is, when you send magazines to a newsstand, it's really a shame, but what they'd end up doing is it's all on consignment, and they just tear up all the magazines that they don't use. And so we would sell on average about 1 out of 5, 20% of the magazines we sold.
Wow.
We sent to the newsstands around the world. And instead, with iPhone Life, we got a 43% sell-through rate, which was just extraordinary with this first issue. And so with that, we had a business, and I ended up hiring people back, and we had a new business.
Wow. Well, that's a pretty dramatic one. But even earlier, I mean, you started out, weren't you mostly supporting HP products, like the Palm Top and that, and maybe BlackBerry? Yep. Did you ever get into the
No, we didn't do BlackBerry.
But the Palm Top kind of disappeared at one point, didn't it?
Well, actually, so there were sort of three key transition points. So we started off doing HP Hewlett-Packard laptops, and then it was done in Corvallis, Oregon. And we did it from 1985 to 1990. And off the record, I got a call from an engineer who really liked us. We were very popular, and then Corvallis. And they said, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but we're going to discontinue the laptop, and we're going to start producing Palm Tops. And I'm really sorry to tell you that, because they knew our whole business was based on supporting their laptop. But for me, I got it immediately. Instead of people buying a $3,000 laptop, they would be buying $700 Palm Tops, and we would have many more customers. And so there was some cooperation with Hewlett-Packard, and so we just switched on a dime and started doing the Palm Top paper instead of the portable paper. There was another switch where Hewlett-Packard had decided to throw in the car. They started to throw in their lot with Microsoft and produce handhelds based on the Microsoft operating system. And so I had about a 15-year experience of working with Hewlett-Packard, plus as a former engineer. And all of a sudden, I had to work with Microsoft, which was extremely challenging. And it took a long time for me to develop a relationship with them and for the magazine to take off. But so, yes, we kept having to switch with the marketplace. And also, it was publishing.
Yeah.
Publishing changed from to publish a magazine used to require these big boards that you would take photos of with type on it, to just sending a PDF to the publisher. So there are lots of changes. And so we had to adapt. And now my partners in iPhone Life have transformed themselves from a physical magazine company to one that makes its money off digital subscriptions. So a business is constantly pivoting and flexible. And that's one of the things that characterized all these entrepreneurs, is how flexible they were.
Yeah, you can't stay married to, to the horse and cart when the automobile's coming along.
Right. Right.
I think it's been that way for centuries, but it does seem like the pace of change has quickened in our lifetimes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dramatically.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue to accelerate.
Yeah. it's hard to imagine. It's, you know, you, we sit here and we think, what can possibly change from now? We have everything.
That's what I was just thinking.
No, I'll tell you.
Go now?
Well, no, it's going to go. It's going to go. It's huge because, you know, the problem is the human mind is used to thinking linearly, but it has to think exponentially if it's going to keep up, because there's so many technologies. Like you've heard of, like, computers. About every year it doubles. Every 18 months it doubles in capability. Well, the same thing is going on in a number of different technologies. Like, I know you're familiar with 3D printing. That's an example.
Right.
Artificial intelligence,
right.
Sensors. And in my opinion, human consciousness is on an accelerating path too. So, you know, you started the podcast with sort of a gloomy weather, gloomy world kind of thing. But I'm actually very optimistic. I feel like even the changes in human consciousness, the thing about an exponential curve is you don't notice it at the beginning. It's like the classic story of this king who gave the inventor of chess the opportunity to get whatever he wanted. And he said, well, just put a penny on the first square and two pennies on the next square and four pennies on the next one and eight on the next one. And the king thought he got a great deal, but he would have gone bankrupt if he was able to fill the checkerboard with two to the 64th number of pennies. and that's the way any exponential, like, you don't notice how computers or artificial intelligence or 3D printing or any of those things, or human consciousness, in terms of the growth of human consciousness, is really taking place underneath the surface. And so I'm really very optimistic in terms of both the transitions that are taking place underneath the surface and even on the external world, the kind of prosperity we'll be able to live in, especially if human consciousness can expand and be more holistic in its expression, which I think is happening with meditation and other movements where people are experiencing the transcendental reality every day.
Well, Hal, I agree with you. I actually like gloomy weather. I like rain, rainy days, because I feel like it's a chance to kind of rest. And even though it's not like I stay in bed or anything, I'm working the same as always, but it just feels a little more restful and peaceful and a chance to recharge. And I also, like, with the situation in the world today with COVID-19 and some of the other things that are going on in the world, leaving aside the environmental issues, but other than that, I feel like all of these things are opportunities for us to reinvent how our society works. Because normally you're going along and everything's working kind of okay. And so it's hard to just, like, put the brakes on, pause, reevaluate, and go off in a different direction. Well, COVID has put the brakes on for us. And so now we have that opportunity. The environmental things, the fires and things that are probably linked to climate change, that's the one that I have a hard time being optimistic about.
But still, I guess I'm optimistic about it. And for the same reason you are about what's happening with COVID, which is that the two things are going on. One, it's just in our face that there's something that's very dramatic that's going wrong. And there's so many different opportunities in terms of making these transformations in the environment. And I guess I'm just a believer that that man's and woman's propensities to survive and to thrive is stronger than to destroy itself. And so I believe that there are a number of people that are working on solutions. And I'll tell you, one of the things that really changes humanity, if you think about it, that's just extraordinary that's going on. With the internet and access, all the world's people, 7-8 billion people, are able to be connected or will be connected in the next few years. Just think, all of that intelligence, being able to collaborate and communicate with each other. And if somebody has an idea, wherever they are, they can raise the money because they're through collaboration and these money programs where you can raise money. You know, these I forgot the name of them, but there's different ways you can raise money.
GoFundMe.
And then GoFundMe, for example.
Kickstarter.
And then there's Kickstarter. And then you can go and find people. If you have an idea, you can find the engineer or the scientist that has the solution. And so that means instead of these huge governmental institutions to be able to solve problems or the huge corporations to solve problems, any individual anywhere in the world can start make a huge change, can really solve a problem. And you've got all this intelligence, and then all that intelligence combined, it's just a different kind of humanity than we've ever experienced before.
I had never thought about that before, but that is so true. That is just, we have unlimited possibilities ahead of us, don't we?
Yes, yes, yes. It's quite extraordinary. And, you know, one of the things that drove us to Fairfield, many of us who moved here, was Maharishi saying that we're about to experience an age of enlightenment, that we're at the dawn. Mm-hmm. And the problem with the dawn... And the problem with the dawn is that most people aren't up, and they don't know that it's...
That's true. And
it's darkest before the dawn. And it's the way I like to think of it also is, you know, if you lived your whole life in winter and somebody described spring to you, you wouldn't believe them. I mean, who would believe that there's these leaves and green and birth and all this stuff? We know everything is cold and frozen and all that. And so it's just our experience is just seeing this, all this negativity. But I think the spring is coming. The dawn is here.
See, I told you we had an uplifting show today.
Yes, we do.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest is Hal Goldstein, author of Meditating Entrepreneurs, Creating Success from the Stillness Within. And you have a website associated with this book also, correct?
Yeah, one of the easiest way to go to it is if you just type in hal.tips, and then it'll forward to meditatingentrepreneur.com, or meditatinge.com is another way of getting there, meditatinge.com. We'll get you there.
Great.
But I encourage people just to go buy the book.
Definitely, yeah.
One of the fun things, and you know, Monica, because you did it, and we're going to hear an expert from you, I think, in a little while, is that I had all the entrepreneurs read their chapters. And so almost all of the 15, I think 10 or 11 of the 15, read their own chapters and recorded it. Another meditating entrepreneur that I'd love to write about is Jeffrey Hedquist, produces audio content and radio commercials, and he produced this Audible book for us. And so it's really a fun listen to. And the nice thing about the book is each chapter is independent. So you can, as your mom did, you don't have to read the whole book. You can just read the chapters you want to read, and they're self-sufficient.
And I'll say, you know, I know everyone in this book. Some better than others, but there's a lot I learned about people, and I haven't read every chapter yet, but it's everybody's story is really fascinating.
It is.
Yeah. And it's great that we have a professional recording studio right here. It's actually out in a barn almost. Out in the middle of nowhere. And it's lovely. And it was an interesting experience for me to record. Of course, I'm used to recording because I've been doing this podcast for 14 years now. But being recorded professionally was a different experience.
Yeah, it's, you're in this little room, and you've got earphones on. You're not talking to anybody except that little voice in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you better repeat that one.
Yep, yep. And it's nice because I know they're going to do all the editing here. If I mess up, you know, as we're going along, I'm making notes of where in the file I'm going to have to go back and smooth things out a little bit. But this is actually maybe a good time to play a little bit of my Audible recording. From my
good.
Story.
Can I introduce it a little bit?
Please do.
Yeah. So I got three parts of your chapter. The first is the very beginning when you sort of give an overview of how you became an accidental entrepreneur, and then I added another excerpt from you where you sort of talk about being a woman and being an entrepreneur, and then the whole end of your chapter, including the spirit. And then finally, I think you're going to play Jeffrey Hedquist, the fellow who the recording studio we went to. At the end of each chapter, I sort of have the top, what I call tweets, the best points. And so Jeffrey reads those points, and then because it comes from an academic kind of point of view, I ask sort of questions to get people to think about the story. And so those are the three things that you'll end up playing.
And you get to hear professional voice talent from Jeffrey Hedquist.
From Jeffrey.
Yeah. Which was really
and
great.
The book, the book is all like that. So the different people read their you read about their story, and then there's these summaries at the end.
Okay, here we go. I didn't set out to be an entrepreneur. In fact, I began my adult life as an 18-year-old mother and college dropout. My goals were to make a decent living and to make a difference in the world. Entrepreneurship provided both. At 22, I had just moved to a new town with my husband, 4-year-old son, and infant daughter. My husband worked 12 hours a day. We didn't have much money and lived in a basement apartment beneath our landlord's. One day, after visiting my grandmother, I returned to discover that my landlady had left a nasty note in my apartment. I was angry and upset. She had invaded my privacy and criticized my housekeeping. I called home and told my father what happened. He said, "Why let this woman upset you? You did nothing wrong. You're giving her power over you. Forget about it." A few weeks later, my dad died while hiking in the Grand Canyon. That last conversation with my father remains with me. I am the one responsible for my happiness, and I have complete control over my attitude. When my father died, I became an accidental entrepreneur. He left his business, Sunsprout Systems, to my younger brother, Brian. Sunsprout manufactured and supplied equipment, seed, and packaging for independent alfalfa and bean sprout growers. Previously, I'd been doing the accounting for the company, and my brother had grown sprouts. Together, we took over operations and got a sink or swim education in every aspect of business, from sourcing to sales. Sunsprouts was the beginning of my business career. Since then, I have founded or been involved in building 5 successful businesses and 2 nonprofit programs. And here, read by Jeffrey Hedquist, are the 12 ideas that Hal pulled out as my tweets and a few thoughts to ponder.
Monica Hadley's 12 tweets. 1. With perseverance, anyone can succeed. Give everything you have, no matter how challenging, no matter how tedious, no matter how long it takes. Until you quit, you haven't failed. Many new businesses have no accounting system. Without numbers, they don't know where they stand, and it is difficult to make good decisions. 3. Take responsibility for everything in your business, even things not your fault. If an employee messes up, take responsibility. You either chose the wrong person, didn't give proper training, or didn't manage properly. 4. Trust, compatibility, mutual respect, and complementary skills are what makes partnerships work. Success usually comes from pairing a visionary sales type person and a strong financial person. 5. Meditation helps, but if you want nature's support, you must give nature something to work with. Show the universe that you mean business, that nothing can stop you. The universe will take note. 6. Investing in yourself means getting in the arena, taking action so you can learn. Win or lose, the skills you develop, the experience you gain, and the friends you make form the basis for future success. 7. The problem is thinking you have a problem. Problems are opportunities. If you have a problem, other people have the problem. If you solve it, you have more business. 8. Knowing what to do requires pulling together everything you know and then going inside for the answer. Just be sure it's not your emotions talking. 9. As a woman, you don't need to deny your femininity to be successful in business. The most important thing is to believe in yourself, to have confidence. 10. Customers aren't always right, but you can make them feel right. 11. Some people think that they must find the thing they love to do. Instead, you need to enjoy whatever you do. Love what you're doing, and you'll be successful. 12. Business success comes from knowing when and whether to pivot. Stick with something long enough to see if it works. Look for hints of progress before making a change. It can be challenging to stay focused and not get distracted by the next great opportunity. Thoughts to ponder. 1. Are you a structure or a flow person, or both? What does that mean for your business? 2. In creating your business, would you prefer to partner or do it yourself? What are the pros and cons? 3. Monica never gave up at Aeron. Persistence is the one quality that all entrepreneurs have. Is that a quality you have or are willing to develop?
So, Hal, you've organized the book into, six different kind of...
Five different sections.
Five different sections.
Oh, six.
Six.
No, you're right.
Yeah,
six.
Yeah,
no,
six.
You're six.
And
six,
six. How did you, you know, was that really obvious to you, how that
no.
came about? No.
No, no. So I basically decided when I had these 15 different chapters, as I was sort of going towards the end, I decided, well, I really ought to organize them in some way. And so I just kept playing with the different folks, and how, because I had about three or four different structures of organizing it. And then the one, should I just go through them quickly, what
sure.
they are?
Sure, yes.
Because it's sort of fun. So the first section I called Following Their Bliss, and I had two people that couldn't be more different in this section. One is Fred Gratson. I really recommend everybody read his story. It's just hilarious because he has sort of a whimsical way of describing how he ended up creating a publicly traded company, and he ended up serving his ice cream that he created on a different company to Ronald Reagan and the White House lawn. And his story is just, you wouldn't believe, talk about weird stuff that goes through. And he's all about doing things that are fun. In fact, there's just a wonderful quote from him. He wrote a book called The Lazy Way to Success. And here's what he says. What successful people call hard work is not hard. It would be less misleading, more inspiring, and more truthful for these same people to exclaim how their love for what they did brought them to their goals. So he has sort of a very radical kind of point of view in terms of what it takes for business. And his whole thing was follow your bliss. And Janet Atwood, another entrepreneur who's actually internationally known, she created a whole company about finding your life purpose, following your passion, and based on a book that she wrote called The Passion Test. And then the second section I called Serving the Community. And that's where I tell the story of Ed Malloy, the mayor, and Betsy Holland, who has this wonderful bookstore we talked about. And then the third one, we have a number of different artists that became business people. And so I told the story of three of them. George Foster is a book cover designer, and he's become the leading independent book cover designer in the United States. Ron Bovard, who you've heard about, who creates stained glass. He was he did his own artwork for many years. And Jim Davis, who was a photographer, and he created a business that memorialized people's success, running marathons, graduating, and so forth. And then, to me, in some way, if not the heart, but the I don't know what to say, the structure of the book was the section that you're in, Monica, which is what I called making business work. And most people think of entrepreneurs as sort of these wild-eyed, I'm going to throw the dice and just go for it kind of people, as you called it in your section, fairy dust people. but really, if you want to have a business, you have to have structure. You have to have accounting systems and operations and all sorts of sort of back-end stuff. Which, by the way, if you're going to generalize, the native Iowans were really wonderful to balance many of us dreamers out. There's three people that I wrote about who made their success by finding people who they could partner with and then clean up their act and put in the structure. And that was Stephen Wynn, you, Monica Hadley, and then Peter Huggins. And Peter's theme was to follow your heart, Peter's theme was that it's the people are the main thing that's important in a business, and that somehow people get forgotten in the numbers and in the, you know, making a profit. But you have to nourish the people and nourish the heart. And then the next section was selling knowledge, and that was me, you know, selling my magazine and information, and even Norlick Smith, who has a website that teaches yoga teachers how to teach, and so she's selling information. And then finally, the most inspiring section of the book, I think, is entrepreneurs who are all about saving the planet. And Francis Tickey is an organic farmer like your father, and he was a soil scientist, a PhD, and he even ran for Secretary of Agriculture, and he has a whole different way of farming, which was much more based on the intelligence of nature rather than a mechanistic approach that most farmers use today. And then Troy and Amy Van Beek have Troy was this Navy SEAL, and he saw all sorts of horrible destruction as people fought for scarce resources, fought for oil in the Middle East, and he saw all this destruction because of it. And he believes that cheap energy and other of these technologies, sort of like what I was talking about, will change the world and eliminate war. And so his business of creating solar energy for Iowa is really about eliminating war. And Amy, who grew up in Fairfield, is an artist, and she has been able to transform her art into supporting her customers in a beautiful way. And so that's sort of the book. Those are the 15 that I put in, and it sort of arbitrarily grouped them, but it worked.
And what a great cast of characters.
Yes, if you, as you and I who know them,
yes,
they are really,
yes,
a bunch of characters, to say the least.
Indeed.
Very different, very different individuals, and yet we're able to create these businesses.
And great stories, and you know, my hat's off to you for being able to convey their stories in this way and make every chapter interesting.
You know, one of the things that you asked at the beginning that I'll even ask you back is that one of the challenges was taking the voice of the entrepreneur. And I would, of course, run it by the entrepreneur. And so I took a look, something from your voice. And then maybe even gender, you know, I'm thinking if there is that way of thinking, a male way versus a female way, how much did you feel like I captured your voice, and how much do you feel like I really wouldn't have said it that way?
Well, I'd say 90%.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. There were a few parts where I'm like, I wouldn't have said that quite that way. Although maybe I did, I don't know. But I wouldn't have written it quite that way. And but mostly I think you got it. Yeah.
Good.
So did you have a favorite chapter, Mom, other than mine?
Well, I'll tell you, when I would read, starting beginning to read, and I would say, oh, great, this is fantastic. And then the next one, oh, my gosh, that's even better. And just kept getting... It would be hard to pick a favorite, really. Aww. Would. I mean, it's, you know. Except, of course, yours.
And do you have a closing quote for us?
Oh, I do. This one is great. Some books are to be tasted, others to be swallowed, and some few to be chewed and digested. And this is one of those.
Aww.
Oh, thank you.
Thank
That's
you.
Very kind.
Thanks for being with us today, Hal.
Okay, well, thanks for doing it, Mark.
And see you all next week on Writer's Voices.
Bye-bye.